Hello, this is Jennifer with Talking Information Center reading some articles from the Dorchester Reporter. The first is Generational Divide, Evident During Blue Hill Avenue Project Testimony. A controversial public works that would include the repositioning of bus traffic on Blue Hill Avenue into center-running bus lanes was the subject of a two-hour meeting hosted by City Councilors Brian Worrell and Minyard Culpepper last Thursday evening. Roughly 200 people attended the event at the William Reed Auditorium in the Prince Hall Grand Lodge on Talbot Avenue, which drew many opponents of the plan, but also featured several young residents who spoke up in support of the bus lane concept. The Blue Hill Avenue Transportation Action Plan has been the subject of dozens of meetings since 2019. Worrell and Culpepper have both signaled opposition to the center lane bus proposal, which recently received a big boost in the form of an $80.3 million federal grant to the MBTA. Opponents clearly outnumbered supporters at the session, but an obvious generational rift provided food for thought for some. An exchange between Diane Wilkerson, the former state senator who opposes the current plan, and Khalil Cooper, a recent college graduate, highlighted the differences. "Nobody takes a bus to pick up their fried chicken for dinner," said Wilkerson. "We don't go get our kids from school or daycare on a bicycle. That's not how we live. We will not have it forced on us. We need to say it again. This is the stupidest urban transportation plan I have ever seen." But Cooper, who graduated from UMass Amherst with an urban planning degree, said it's not that simple for everyone, noting that the 28-bus route on the corridor is the busiest in New England. "I heard some people say they don't take the bus for certain things," he said. "I do take the bus to get my little brother from school and to get fried chicken for dinner. This is about disrupting that highway for a bus so people can ride it every day." Dorchester's Maria Romero said young people are living in a different world than older adults. She said the center lane bus on Columbus Avenue eases congestion and makes for a faster commute for bus riders, and she'd like to see that on the rest of her commute. "As young people, we can't afford to buy a car," she said. "If you're a young person struggling with housing, the last thing you want to do is drop $10,000 on transportation. We as young people are sick and tired of waiting for things to happen. We need things to happen for us now so we can get to work and school on time." One after another, young people, many aligned with the Mattapan Food and Fitness Coalition, told of detentions for being late to school because of delayed buses or being late to work or after school events. One young man said that they would inherit the earth and their viewpoint should carry some weight. Older adults in opposition voiced familiar concerns about the logistics of the center lane bus and the idea that it isn't for us, meaning the plan is a tool for gentrification and displacement of the existing community. "We stand in opposition to this plan," said Minister Randy Muhammad of Muhammad's Mosque No. 11 in Grove Hall. "It doesn't have to be all or nothing. We want these federal dollars, but not at the expense of inconveniencing our community, residents, and businesses. They are making plans for 10 to 25 years down the road, and they are planning for us not to be here," added Wes Ward, a young man from Mattapan. "The plan is to kick us out of our community. They already know we don't want it. So what is taking so much time to go in an office and write that out on a piece of paper?" Noted Mac Hudson, a community resident and leader of Access MA. "The process has not been fair to us. We are the community. We are saying no. There were 2,000 signatures on a petition, and we again said no. So why are we still here talking about this?" Taking the consideration of the young people to heart, along with the history of disenfranchisement and displacement via improvement projects, John Smith St. Cyr gave this warning. "When small businesses like ours have reduced access and lose parking, they don't adjust. They close," he said. "When they close, they don't stay vacant for long and they aren't retained by the community. If the trade-off is getting to Mattapan or Nubian Square 5 minutes faster at the cost of more black families being priced out, that is not community improvement." At the end of the meeting, Culpepper and Worrell said their observation was that a majority of the community was not in support of the existing plan, though they noted the support from young people. Worrell also said that he favors the enhanced beautification plan that would update the corridor without the center bus lane. Presley says she has enough support to force vote on Haitian TPS extension. Representative Ayanna Presley says she has secured enough support from her colleagues in the House to seek a vote to extend temporary protected status for Haitians living in the United States. Presley, the co-chair of the House Haiti Caucus, has led a petition to seek a 3-year extension on the TPS designation, which the Trump administration has moved to terminate. The Trump directives have been blocked to date by federal judges, but the matter could be challenged to the Supreme Court. Presley said on Friday she now has the minimum number of signatures, 218, from House members needed to move the discharge petition forward and force a vote within the coming weeks. The success of this discharge petition is a testament to our collective organizing and the strength of our broad, diverse movement to affirm the humanity, dignity, and safety of our Haitian siblings. Representative Presley said in a statement, "Today we are a critical step closer to saving lives and delivering the protections they deserve. The House must vote on this, and I urge all of my colleagues to strongly support." Presley, alongside Senator Markey, organized a hearing in Mattapan in January focused on the TPS crisis, which could impact tens of thousands of people living legally in Massachusetts and as many as 350,000 across the nation. Boston hosts commissioning ceremony for USS Massachusetts, a nuclear sub. Above the surface of the water, the newly commissioned USS Massachusetts nuclear submarine doesn't appear too impressive. It only emerges about 30 feet out of the water with a periscope, a nondescript black skin, and not much else. Underneath, however, the $2.8 billion attack sub is a sight to behold. The brand new underwater war machine is docked in Boston Harbor this weekend inside the Conley Shipping Terminal in South Boston. "The thing that's amazing to me is watching it from the end of construction and seeing it built in the shipyard, then taking it out for sea testing, and then the other day bringing it into Boston Harbor for the first time was just amazing," said Commanding Officer Mike Seidsma, a Rochester, New York native who has been leading the crew for the past 44 months. "I don't think we've brought a sub into Boston Harbor since the 1980s or 90s. We have one of the most advanced pieces of technology in the military here." The USS Constitution sails past the Virginia-class nuclear-powered fast-attack submarine USS Massachusetts during Massachusetts commissioning in Boston on March 28, 2026. Massachusetts is the newest fast-attack submarine and the fifth U.S. Navy vessel to bear the name. The crew includes 147 members doing all sorts of jobs, from cook to nuclear mechanics to torpedo specialists and other advanced jobs. The crew formed in October 2019 as the construction on the ship started and now has an average age between 19 and 25, with 25% of the crew female. The Virginia-class sub is one of the first in its class to have mixed gender accommodations. The submarine also has incredible capabilities. It carries 25 Tomahawk missiles and 20 ATAC supersonic missiles as well. "We have some of the most elite sailors in the Navy on board here. Our crew is amazing," he noted. "You can't get a ship away from the pier on a sub submerged without every single sailor doing their jobs. When you see 19-year-olds on a sub and how mature and capable they are, you'd be surprised how incredibly adept they are compared to a normal high schooler or teenager not on a sub," said Chief of the Ship Edward Brennan III, a Fall River native who chose the USS Massachusetts several years ago. "Every day just goes by," he continued. "You're underwater, you don't see the sun. We rarely go up to periscope depth, and only a few see that. We could be off the coast of Virginia, or we could be on the other side of the world, and it's all the same." He added, "We have food for about 30 to 45 days, and our culinary specialists cook 300 meals a day. The only limiting factor on how long we can be underwater is food. We can have 120 days of food max. The reporter took an exclusive tour of the USS Massachusetts on Friday, and to say the quarters are tight is an understatement. Sailors sleep six to a room, and bunks are stacked three high on each side. The total size about that of a normal half bathroom. There is a place for everything, and fire suppression systems are of utmost importance and are everywhere. There are computers, touchscreens, wires, and even drinking fountains all through the narrow corridors over three stories. Every member of the crew has a job, and Brennan said they work 8-hour shifts and then they are off 16 hours. Each job on the submarine is a 24-hour operation, whether launching Tomahawk missiles or cooking meals. When they're not working, they watch a lot of movies or look at personal electronic devices like iPads, but they also read a lot and study hard, he said. They also have to sleep. Sailors on the ship said it is common knowledge in the Navy that the best food is on submarines. There is fresh baked bread every day in the kitchen, and the meals are carefully planned and of a higher quality than above waterline vessels. They are the only members of the Navy fleet to have deep fryers as well, which came in handy on Friday when they were making hamburgers and french fries for lunch. Todd Carrillo of H3, the largest military shipbuilder in the country, said the USS Massachusetts began to be laid out in 2020 and is the 12th Virginia-class sub they have delivered, with 25 of them total in the fleet. They partner with General Dynamics and built the USS Massachusetts in Newport News, Virginia, over the last 6 years. It was christened in May 2023. Each shipyard built sections of the sub, and the pieces were barged between the facilities, and we alternated the assembly, he said. Sheryl Sandberg, the former longtime chief operating officer of Meta Platforms, Facebook, was on hand Friday as the official sponsor of the ship, though it isn't what it sounds like, she laughed. A sponsor is a civilian role seen like a godmother to the ship and is traditionally a woman who looks out for the ship and its crew. This has been the honor of my life, she said, noting she was asked by a high-ranking Navy official to assume the duty in 2015. It goes back 180 years in the Navy, and it's a great honor. We are 3 months away from celebrating the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and last year the Navy celebrated its 250th anniversary. That teaches us that we don't have a Navy because we have a country, but we have a country because we have a Navy. After the commissioning ceremony in Boston this weekend, the USS Massachusetts will submerge and head into the deep for more training and also to await their orders. There were no hints about where they will eventually deploy, whether to the Middle East or elsewhere, but they are capable of going anywhere in the world. The geopolitical situation right now is interesting, said Seidsma. We're always trained and ready to fight. Geopolitics is definitely interesting now, but it's now what we worry about. It's keeping the ship safe and being ready to execute our orders. The new sub is the sixth ever USS Massachusetts to be in the Navy fleet. The first was a wooden ship that saw action in the Mexican-American War in 1845. The most well-known USS Massachusetts was a third-class battleship that now is a famous museum ship in Fall River. That ship came into the fleet in 1942 and was decommissioned in 1962. It logged 11 battle scars during World War II and Pacific Theater action. Saturday's commissioning ceremony is expected to attract numerous federal elected officials, Governor Maura Healey, and any number of military leaders from all branches of government. Beyond that, the guest list was not publicized. Neighbors assail Minot Street proposal as a neighborhood killer. More than 100 people gathered in the cafeteria of the Richard J. Murphy School on Wednesday evening to listen and respond to a developer's plan to add two new buildings and 24 additional units of housing to what is presently a 24,670-square-foot lot with a two-family house on Minot Street in Dorchester. The two-hour meeting included a visual presentation by the developer's attorney and comment from residents who presented a united front in opposition to the proposal for 39 Minot Street. The property owner, Jim Pascal Jr., who was present at the meeting but did not speak, wants to keep the existing two-family Hammond house intact and build two new four-story buildings on either side. There would be 20 parking spots included, according to his plans. Pascal's team filed a small project review application with city officials in February, and a city-sponsored review meeting is set for April 9th. This week's meeting was organized by two nearby civic associations and abutters who insist the density of the project is far too big for Minot Street. Pascal's attorney, George Morancy, and architect Tim Johnson spoke on behalf of the development team. These plans have already been shown to some of the people here. Some people here, it might be their first time seeing the plan, said Morancy. We fully understand that many people in the neighborhood have formulated an opinion about the project. We understand there is opposition. Our purpose here tonight is to present the plans for those who haven't seen them, to answer any questions anyone may have, whether you've seen the plans or not, and to listen to your comments. Johnson then walked through a presentation of the current plans. The existing building is in the center of the property, Johnson explained. This is an older building from the 1800s, and the city does not want us to tear it down. We are renovating the existing building in the center and adding three units to the back to create a six-unit building. On either side of this building are our new buildings. The two new buildings would be four stories high and include a total of 20 units. Neither will have an elevator, meaning that only the first floor will be accessible. The basements would be used entirely for utility purposes only. In the rear, we have 20 parking spaces. We have 26 units. That's about 0.76 parking spaces per unit, said Johnson. Besides parking for cars, we also have parking for bikes, which was required under Article 80. Article 80, the city's review process for projects this size, was a constant theme of Wednesday night's conversation. There was the perception that there was too much initial work done with the planning department before coming out into the community, explained Morancy. The fact is that the planning department has changed the Article 80 process based really on those concerns. The new process is that the city is requiring engagement with the community as part of an early outreach plan before filing anything with the city. He continued, I want to acknowledge the fact that we understand there was unhappiness about the initial stages of this project and how we proceeded by meeting with the city. That was the process at the time. It is no longer the process. Boston City Councilor John Fitzgerald, who represents Minot Street and has publicly opposed the project in the past, was quick to share his frustrations regarding the lack of community involvement. I worked at the BPDA for 17 years prior to becoming a city councilor. I'm very familiar with how this process works, said Fitzgerald, who said his first time meeting the Pascals was at Wednesday's meeting. I do remember a day when it was a sign of respect to come to a city councilor and say, this is what we're proposing in your area. So I think, honestly, off the bat, we're off to a rough start. Fitzgerald shared that he is against the project because it will change the character of the neighborhood. That is, he said, one of the last areas we have for families to have their little slice of the American dream. You got your house, your front yard, your backyard, you got neighbors borrowing sugar. Everyone knows each other, looks out for each other. It's a beautiful thing, and it's something the city is losing. He continued, what this project does is bring in people that I don't think want to be part of the neighborhood. I don't think they will want to lay roots down here. They won't care if the sidewalks crack. They won't care if our Boston public schools are good because they know they're not going to be sticking around here. Fitzgerald closed his remarks saying, I'm for development. However, this specific project in this specific location is not the right thing to do. His comments were met with a sustained round of applause. Anthony Gentile, who lives across from the project on Dunn Terrace, said family has owned their home for more than a century. That's 106 years. That's how far back our roots go, said Gentile. What bothers me the most about this is that the people who are developing this don't live in our neighborhood. They have no conception of what Neponset is about, even though they have been building in our neighborhood for years, Gentile said. This is a neighborhood killer. This has no place at all in our neighborhood. It will destroy what Neponset is, and it will destroy what Neponset has always been. I speak for almost everyone in this room. We are steadfastly against this proposal. Gentile's neighbor, John O'Toole, described the project as obscene for the neighborhood in which it sits. Having lived in the neighborhood for decades, O'Toole said he's seen many changes, but that this proposal just doesn't make sense. Instead, he suggests the developers look at past projects in the neighborhood that have worked and take inspiration from them. We have a couple of good examples of what does work. There is a great example on Chicatabut Street, a historical home. It's still the centerpiece of the development, said O'Toole about the development at 23 Chicatabut Street that preserved a historical home with tasteful townhouses built behind. He also pointed to 608 Gallivan Boulevard. Right across from St. Brendan's Church, very similar size and square footage, we got that to go from 28 units to 12 units and bring it down from 4 stories with roof decks to 3 stories and ample parking for the whole development. That's what we hope to achieve with this. Cedar Grove Civic Executive Board member Lauren Woods and direct abutter Ray Hanley worry that developers are not willing to take any suggestions at all. When Woods asked what changes had been made since the meeting in the fall, Morency said nothing, but clarified that many changes had been made since the original project proposal. This project was conceptualized a couple of years ago, quite frankly, Morency said. We originally approached the planning department with a much different looking project. The original proposal was one single building, 32 units, demolishing the existing building. We had at least a 1-to-1 parking ratio. The entire back of the site was parking. He added, we're still very much in that community engagement process. We're still getting feedback. We're still listening. This meeting is still informing the planning process. Hanley said that among everything discussed at the abutters meeting, including concerns regarding traffic, parking, pedestrian safety, shadow and sunlight, sidewalks, and loss of neighborhood character, just about nothing has changed. The fact that you made no changes whatsoever just from hearing from the direct abutters, never mind all the other people opposed to it, shame on you, said Eileen Walsh of Flavia Street, whose comment drew applause and cheers. Morency said that the Pascals were listening to people's concerns and would make some decisions before the planning department sponsored public meeting on April 9th. The meeting is currently scheduled for a 6 p.m. start on Zoom, but several neighbors asked that it be moved in person. State Senator Nick Collins, who is opposed to the project, was present at the meeting and said that he is also in favor of an in-person public meeting with a hybrid option and is happy to request this. Representative Dan Hunt was not at the meeting but sent a statement opposing the plan as well. Karen McNutt, an attorney who lives on Minot Street, reminded everyone at the meeting that they can take action. This is a bad idea. You're going to go through everything and go to the Zoning Board of Appeals, and you know what they are going to say. You're fine because they'll approve just about anything, she said. But I'll tell you something. You folks out there don't have to accept that. You can take that to Superior Court. She added, this is a neighborhood destroyer. It destroys the quality of life in our little corner of Dorchester. You don't have to sit and take it. In 7-0 vote, school committee passes $1.73 billion budget. The Boston School Committee on Wednesday unanimously passed a $1.73 billion budget for next school year, a more than 4.5% increase over this year's spending plan, but ongoing financial pressures and declining enrollment will put between 300 and 400 jobs at risk. Advocates are calling for the city to invest an additional 1% of its operating budget, about $48 million, to avert cuts to student services. The school committee holds exclusive authority to revise line items in the budget. The city council and mayor may approve, reject, or reduce the total recommended budget, but do not have the authority to revise individual items or increase the budget. During a February budget presentation, Superintendent Mary Skipper said certain reductions would be necessary as costs continue to outpace revenues. She said fewer teachers would be needed because of an enrollment decline of about 3,000 students over the last 2 years. Other top financial pressures include labor contracts, transportation expenses, and rising health insurance costs. Increased expenses have contributed to an estimated $53 million budget deficit this year, which led to a hiring freeze announced in January. The budget that the city has proposed for the schools is not adequate to meet the needs of all of our members, particularly students with disabilities and multilingual learners, said Boston Teachers Union President Eric Berg. The restoration of any necessary services for our students is a move in the right direction. We're seeking additional funding added into the BPS budget so they can restore some of the services that are currently cut. Those proposed cuts would primarily impact teaching and aid positions, as well as administrative roles and other support staff. Special education and bilingual faculty are to be especially affected. Mary Stenson, a school nurse at the Melvin H. King South End Academy Elementary School, a specialized school for students with increased social and emotional needs, said she has seen the effects of reductions firsthand, adding parents who have students with similar needs should find these cuts alarming. People see our students as bad kids, but they just need their emotional needs met. Bigger schools can't meet their needs, Stenson said. Listen to educators. Take it from the people in the buildings. Formerly known as the McKinley Schools, the Melvin H. King Academy offers speech therapy, physical therapy, and dental and vision care, among other services. Julie Cass, a paraprofessional, said it's not uncommon to need multiple staff members to address the behavioral needs of one student. Reducing special education staff in favor of inclusion models could create unsafe environments for other students and staff, she said. We do intense and effective work. Some kids can coast by. Our kids can't coast, Cass said. Many students come in with low self-esteem. They get to find out how smart they are. Sumaya Shaikh, a fifth-year educator at Dr. William H. Henderson Inclusion School in Dorchester, said cuts will hurt her students and may make the work of remaining staff more difficult. There are a lot of steps to go through before eliminating student-facing roles, Shaikh said. You can't talk about the successes of BPS without the faults. For Samuel Rodriguez, who has a fifth grader at Blackstone Elementary in the South End, with both behavioral and multilingual needs, cuts to special education services could mean losing communication with her daughter. Rodriguez's daughter has an IEP, an individualized education program, and benefits from speech therapy and additional support in math and reading. All students, regardless of diverse needs, need this staff, said Rodriguez, translated from Spanish. By cutting these things, you limit all learners. Rodriguez was one of dozens of parents, union members, and advocates who rallied outside City Hall before the City Council budget hearing Tuesday to call on the council and Mayor Michelle Wu to prevent service cuts. In an overflowing chamber, Boston Public Schools students presented legislators with letters of intent tied to flowers, and many more gave oral testimony. Ahead of the 7-0 vote on Wednesday, school committee members discussed the allocation of transitional funds for schools that will close, improvements for future budget seasons, and the role of public comment in amending the budget. I'm sure there are things we are doing in our schools because we've always done them that may or may not give us the outcomes that we're looking for, said school committee chair Jerry Robinson, calling for an audit of the BPS central office and at the school level. It's time to do some self-reflection. Student outcomes don't change until adult behaviors do. The budget now goes to the City Council and Wu for final approval.